Okay, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We're one of about 26, 27 lodges around the world. We're part of the Theosophical movement, and we're independently devoted to the cause of Theosophy. So we have activities here. We have meetings on 2 days. Sunday, the doors open at 10:30, and the meeting begins promptly at 11 and ends promptly at 12. We have a library in the front of the building. It's a reference library, which is open before our Wednesday night meetings. And the library is open from 5:15 until 7:15. And then there's a slight interlude of 15 minutes. The meeting begins at 7:30 and ends at 8:30. And our Wednesday meetings are a study class, a little different format than the forum or lecture or panel. We're having a panel today on Sundays. So on Wednesday nights, we are studying in The Key to Theosophy by H.P. Blavatsky. It's written in question and answer form, and we'll be studying that until the end of June. And then in the summer, we study the Bhagavad Gita. So the meetings on Sunday are topics, and every month we have an overall topic. And this month of October, it is Theosophy and the Theosophical Movement. This morning, we're discussing the three objects of the Theosophical Movement. So it's a good introduction to the underpinnings of Theosophy. We neglected to mention that we have a book table which is open before and after the meetings, and it closes slightly before the meeting begins. And we sell straight line theosophical publications at no cost, so they're very reasonably priced. So without any further ado, we would like to read the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So that is our declaration. And the three objects of the Theosophical movement, of the United Lodge, well, of the Theosophical movement in general, are universal brotherhood, the study of literature, the Theosophical literature, and other related literature, and third, I feel like
investigation.
And oh, right, the investigation of the principles like that are latent in man. Like, so we from this, just from this declaration here, we really have. We have like it's such it encapsulates so well the objects of theosophy. You know, we have independent devotion. We have only really one doctrine, really only one requirement that is necessary to ally yourself with the movement. And that is the belief in universal brotherhood. The fact that the spiritual identity of each and all is one. That we all come from one source, and that we are many and varied in our personalities and in our abilities and in our actions, but we all come from one source. So, we have one aim, purpose, and teaching, and we it's by unity and study and work. So if we believe that we are unity, then we should treat everyone as we ourselves would like to be treated. Now, brotherhood not only encompasses, well, it encompasses all of nature, that there is nothing that is not alive. Even so-called inanimate objects, we may not see the motion, we may not see, we cannot see through matter. That's actually, there will come a time in the evolution of the race when we will, there'll be something called permeability. We'll actually be able to see through matter, but at our current state of evolution, we cannot. So everything is alive, everything is in motion, and everything is centered around that this earth, that this cycle, that this great cycle of evolution, that man is really at the center. We are at the center of spirit and matter, kind of have one foot in each. We're at the intersection of spirit and matter, and that everything either was, is, or will be a man. So, brotherhood also implies that we are engaged in the service of humanity, that we want to be able, to better able to help and teach others. So we need to study. It requires study in order for us to help and teach others. We often, you know, there are people who are struggling, and they may not be able to find the words to express themselves, but after attendance at meetings and listening to the principles and realizing our true spiritual identity, that we are one, that we are not poor, miserable sinners. We are, in fact, gods in evolution, that we have a godly spiritual nature, which is now covered up by much materialism and also the indoctrination of churches and leaders who have kept us really in bondage for couple of thousands of years. But that is not our nature. We are not these bodies. We are not these forms. We are not these thoughts, because thoughts can be changed. And that is actually the Theosophical movement is here to change the buddhi manas, which is, they're Sanskrit words, but buddhi is that higher spiritual intuition that we all have, and we're here to develop that. And manas is mind, the thinking principle. Man comes from manas. And spirit is gender neutral, so of course manas includes includes everything, not just men and women. It includes all that is seen and unseen in nature, and that there are almost endless hierarchies in nature of beings that are behind the scene that are helping us. The philosophy was given to us by masters of wisdom who are perfected human beings, and they are part of a great brotherhood, and we are part of that brotherhood as well. We are really all one with them. But they need companions. They need to work behind the scene. We need to come up to them. We need to take a step towards them, and they will take a step towards us. So we are one great whole, and we have these teachings. We have the help of the masters, and we have each other. And we don't need anything more. We have all the tools to evolve. But that's part of the second talk. That's one of the other three principles.
So, can we not say that this philosophy of theosophy is some sort of a core or a center or a focus, and yet it has workable methods? It's practical, it's logical, and the realistic methods. And it says to live by in one's daily life. In other words, we can take some of these ideas that are brought up within the objects and get to the point. So as it states with the second object, it says to promote the study of archaic wisdom, which is the fountain from which all the great religions and sciences of the world has sprung in their original purity, which became corrupt, shall we say, with error through centuries of human selfishness and ignorance. So we see that change. And as HPB has said, we have to seek to obtain knowledge of all the laws of nature, of that idea of the one source, not a being, but a source, that of a, shall we say, universal intelligence and consciousness. So in that extent, we can look at it, as was stated, as a core or a center to start with. And then basically, we will touch lightly on the third object, which can be an interest to us in many different ways. It says to investigate the hidden mysteries of nature under every aspect possible, and the psychic and spiritual powers latent in man. Just in that idea alone, it is stated that there are definite things, and there are definite times. And in this whole idea of evolution, there is also at the same time involution. There is a growth inward and outward. So it says in the teachings, what a student, which you really, if we look at the idea that life is a school and we're all students in this school, what we have to do above all things is to forget our personality. Shall I live for myself or shall I live for all self? These objects need to be considered in relations to and in the light of the three fundamental propositions of the philosophy. Because if we study those three in conjunction with these objects, we will get a deeper understanding of who and what we really are. And to that extent, that is all humanity. So we look for the source in everything. Where did it all start? Where did it begin? Where did it come from? Then we can look at the idea, well, what's the process? How did it come to be? Now we can use this on anything. And then again, the purpose. What is the purpose? The unfolding, emerging evolution of all. Now it states that each one can gain knowledge based upon evidence and experience. No limit can be set to its evolutionary possibility in perfectionists. So if we take these three, plus the idea of the fundamental propositions which deal with the philosophy, we can maybe get a better idea of it. Now we will give us some examples. Let's talk about history, and especially ancient history. There were the Oriental schools, the Egyptian schools, the schools of India, and Hindu, and the great schools from the Greeks, and also folklore and traditions for the common man, because this was a way to carry on the information and the knowledge through folklore, through traditions, through symbols. Now, when we speak of symbols, wherever we can think of on this globe, there are certain symbols that are universal. They've been that way, they're that way now, and they will be that way in the future. Take the idea of the sun. Take the idea and stretch yourself of space. Is there anywhere or any time when we can think we're things do not exist in space, that space exists beyond things within it? The fact we can tell by outer forms that space is eternal. It's there. Everything evolves within it. And also, we want to look at the idea of forms. Let's take the most basic ones. What within these forms can we see intelligence? Let's take the mineral. The mineral's intelligence is that of cohesion, that holding together, that giving forth on it. Let's take the vegetable kingdom. We see that cohesion, but now let's add sensation. Then let's go to the animal. Again, we see cohesion. We see sensation, but now add instinct. Instinct, intelligence, knowledge. Then we have man. We know we have cohesion. We know we have sensations. We know instinctually we know some things, but we now have self-consciousness. I am I. We know that. So it says to look for that long lost but important secrets of nature. They're there. We can learn from them. And the idea of that these ideas could be and are practical if one becomes a student of them. If you really go into all these different things, it's like just in the ancient schools of history. Where did those ancient schools of history, prior to what they expressed, come from? They had to exist somewhere, that knowledge. There had to have been those beyond what we know is today as human beings who have learned these and have kept that candle, shall we say, lit all down through the ages, one way or another. Those teachings are there for us to find today and will be far into the future. And it says, the moment of choice is not a fixed period of time. It's made up of all moments. So we are constantly, hopefully, trying to improve ourselves so that we can be better able to help and teach others of these basic ideas that have been, as stated earlier, forgotten, changed. And again, that goes back to organized ideas. Science is probably the closest to these basic ideas because they're constantly growing and learning and changing. And in a way, we have to become a student of life, as it says. We have to learn to study. In our daily choices, our daily life choices, we can put them to a test. We can use examples that we can stretch our minds through. So they're not far-fetched ideas, but there's something innate within every one of us that has that feeling of knowing certain things. We might not know where we got these ideas. Are they our ideas? Instinctually, we feel certain things in certain areas. Those didn't necessarily come from a book or something we heard or something we were told. It's a knowledge within us. And we can use the example of children. Little children at play in the playground know when something is not right. That's not fair. That's not right. How do they know this? How do they know instinctually that it's something that should be spread between all, not for just one? So we can acknowledge there are things about our nature we probably never questioned before until we walked into this idea of theosophy. And there's where we really start to have to question. You've got to question things. Don't go with the flow. Let it be your flow, not their flow or something you read, but something you know. This is the way to do it, not this way. Because we all know that idea of justice, of right and wrong. Some feel it more than others. Others speak of it more than others. But the fact of the matter is, we all know that feeling. So between the three fundamental principles of the philosophy and these three objects that were put out by the theosophical movement of that time, will not only be here and now, they will be in further greater ages of humanity. So now we'll open it for comments and
So if someone comes to the lodge, has heard about Theosophy, maybe read a little on their own, and hears about these meetings, obviously that person has seen something about the philosophy that's interesting to them, they're starting to question, they want to learn more about it. Why would it be that the philosophy, as its second object of the whole movement, is to point elsewhere and encourage people to study religions, ancient and modern, and the sciences and philosophies of mankind? How does that help a student learn more about Theosophy?
Well, the idea of how does it help, it becomes more than any course you could probably take in a college today, because you are delving into many ancient schools, periods of time that has gone beyond what we know historically of time, that there are certain basic ideas that have never changed. They were, at that point in time, they were founded, they were expressed, and they were lived. And now at this time, we're doing the same thing. That whole idea of comparative religions, just to show that it's not just for one area or one time, it exists.
Okay. Well, the mind is like a parachute and only works when it's open.
Oh, I like that.
And if we're not open to truth wherever we may find it, then we're saying that we are the possessors of truth. If we're saying, don't look elsewhere, don't read this, don't read that, when we were raised, we were actually told not to read the Bible. It'll just confuse you. But so we look for these ideas everywhere else. We trace them. We look at their sources, because they didn't spring up like Minerva. They didn't just appear fully grown, and there's tracings throughout the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, through the Gnostic teachings, but Theosophy is a synthesis. But in order to really appreciate the synthesis, we should go to and see where it came from. Just like the source of a great river, it's great to go to the lake where it, you know, where it begins. There's a hand in the corner in the back there.
Well, the philosophy also suggests to check, test, and verify whatever it is that we're given as an idea. So by checking all these other sources, in many respects, it will make more firm in our minds that this is the truth.
In the back on the bench there?
And there's also a very individual experience, and that's that in reading of some of these ancient materials, we may remember something from a previous life. It may touch a tone in us, I know this, and then we can follow it in a different way.
With the tie there? Yes, you.
In the reading of the Declaration, it was mentioned that theosophists are bound by a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. So in studying all these traces from different ancient and modern philosophies and religions, we see that there are certain underlying universal aims and purposes and teachings that all human endeavor centers have shared. And so it unites us with all those in the past and present and future, and helps us realize we're part of a movement that's bigger than ourselves and we can contribute.
Yes, we're a part of a fraternity, in a sense. We're part of a brotherhood. We're part of this movement that's been suppressed at times, but it's never gone away. There's always been those that have been possessors of this knowledge. sometimes the penalty was death for many years for speaking out, free thinkers speaking these ideas. But for the past several hundred years, slowly, there's many, many reasons why, but it's said in the philosophy that the last quarter of each century is a cycle where an impulse is given, a spiritual impulse is given, and then the next 75 years, it's assimilation, it's like digestion in a sense, it's assimilation of the ideas and practice of the ideas.
It's
either latent or active in the hearts of every human being, this love of humanity, this oneness, this unity, it dwells there, and great beings awaken that in us, and we see all religions, they're based on the same truths, Hinduism, Buddhism, the civilization of Egypt and Chaldea. I mean, every great civilization has at its root these great truths. And that's why the study of other religions verifies in us that this is a universal truth, our universal ideas, that does not exclude anyone.
Very much so. And we were thinking this whole idea of universal brotherhood. Especially now, where we learn instantaneously things that are going on the farthest planets and also parts of this earth that we see, that we know instantly what's going on. Whereas in previous times, it took time for any situation to move along. Because we speak also of the great ages, that of a golden age, a silver age, a bronze age, an iron age. We happen to be in this period of time of evolution in the iron age, the dark age. One thing it has in its favor is things move along much quicker than they did in previous ages. As we said, this instantaneous with all this technology. And we sort of wonder to ourselves, is there going to be a time when this technology is going to crash, or it's going to simmer down, or whatever, or continue? But the fact that the same basic ideas and symbols down through the ages have never changed. It's our awakening that we find it, not that it comes to us. We find it by our wanting to know certain things that we can't seem to understand, or we've never got an explanation deep enough to really have us feel it. Way in the back.
Very early on in the panel discussion, the words doctrine and belief were used. But from this very rich discussion now, the idea is more that they're propositions and mindful, intentional objects that have been offered, and that the inquiry is really free and independent thinking, isn't it? It's not rote memorization,
right,
and blind belief. Or is it?
We'll take the number one. Behind curtain number one. It's, as we said, it's behind curtain number one. We'll take that one. We feel that as a thinking human being, we need to experience thinking, not just adapt or take it in, actually think about situations and actually think about things and what can this information give me to help me understand things. So it's It's for each individual in their period of time and their period of effort that they can gain more knowledge about that true spiritual self that we are told is within us. That, not this physical form that we see, nor this personality when we look in the mirror. This personality is here today, shall we say, and gone tomorrow. It will never come again. Points from it might, but the fact of the matter is it's a constant building, and we are within the movement.
Universal Brotherhood is the only doctrine.
True.
They're the words of Mr. Judge. It is a doctrine. But we anything else, you don't need to believe. You can question anything. But how can you ally yourself with an altruistic movement without believing in universal brotherhood? Because there are many limited brotherhoods. Many, many, many. There are many groups, organizations. They could be spiritual. They could be labor organizations. There's many stripes and colors, but they're limited. We have no limits here.
Okay, so when it comes to Universal Brotherhood, that new person who walks in the front door can say, we're all one family. I've generally been taught that as a child, and so it's, one family of humanity. But the declaration tells us that if we put the principles of the theosophy into action, if we live them, if we live an exemplary life, then the outcome of that life will be that we will have a profounder conviction of the truth of universal brotherhood. How is that? What's the difference between just saying, yeah, I believe it, I've been taught that, okay, we're all one family, versus a deeper conviction of knowing it? What do you have to do to have a deeper conviction to know it?
It's in the heart. That's where it is. It's we need to think with the heart and feel with our minds. So by feeling with our minds, we listen to others, we use our ears, and we really listen to what they're saying, what their tone is, and then it simmers down to the heart, and there are more impulses from the heart to the brain than vice versa. So if we are thinking with our hearts, then we'll see beyond the separateness and the illusions. This gentleman here.
Well, a bunch of fellas walking through the woods upstate Pennsylvania, thick woods. Saw a little acorn laying on the ground, looked up, and we knew that oak tree, 30, 40 feet high, maybe 5 feet in diameter, deep roots. All that in this little acorn. Over there was a pine cone open, and surrounding it, many, many huge pine trees. Well, another person had the idea that from these little things, seeds, these mighty trees sprang up. So we want to say that was an illustration of how ideas can produce everything in nature.
Those seed ideas.
How is that possible?
Those seed ideas from little seeds come great things. As you said, from that little acorn came that great oak tree. Well, in a certain way, seed ideas within us can open us up more to not the matter part of our nature, but the feeling part of our nature, that heart nature, that opening up. So seed ideas are important because there's something, by planting it, we can try to develop it on our own. improve on it, we gain on it, we try to understand it, and as said, we nurture it. We can nurture seed ideas within ourselves, and if we nurture them to a certain point, we will know that inner meeting way in the back.
Well, we think everybody should carry an acorn in their pocket, because not only does it hold a future oak tree, but enough oak trees to cover the face of the planet. So we think it's very symbolic of the universe and evolution. But you talked about losing technology, that it might crash. And then it was mentioned that we should study and not just memorize. But memorizing is important. The Universal Brotherhood, all of us know the Golden Rule, and it's in every great religion and philosophy. If we memorize some of these ideas, it doesn't matter if everything crashes. That's still our seed for continuing the learning.
Good point.
And whenever there are disasters or depressions, whenever there's traumatic things like earthquakes, large fires, hurricanes, volcanoes, you name it, what it does is it actually brings out the best in people. Because it's within us. It's in our nature to want to help others. It's the most human thing there is to want others to succeed, to want others to try to help.
Go back to the idea of universal brotherhood. Is it a doctrine? Is it a belief? Is it both? Isn't there a difference between holding on to the ideal and perhaps sentiment of universal brotherhood, as opposed to knowing that it is a fact in nature, to be able to prove and demonstrate to ourselves and others that everything is interdependent, affected by one another. One cannot lift themselves up without, at the same time, lifting up nature, and the opposite being true. To know that for a fact, to understand that it's not just a proposition, but his knowledge is different from having a sentimental belief or ideal to hold on to.
Did you want to say anything?
Well, we were thinking, I think you phrased it as best you could. It makes it alive. It makes it real. It makes us maybe look at the world and what's going on around us now on a different basis, because you know that old saying, don't bother to cry over spilt milk. It's a movement of forwardness. It's a movement of stretching more, of that idea of stretching. We can really stretch ourselves to the whole fact of this universal brotherhood. By now, we seem to feel that it was for the 500-600 years earlier times when there wasn't all this intercommunication. We see more of it as being spread around the world. We see this brotherhood fact. We see it. We hear about it. And we hear about it instantaneously, practically. So that should give us more of an awareness. This is real. This does exist. And it has existed, and it will continue to exist as long as we move with the evolution of the time. Way in the back.
And in regards to the question about universal brotherhood, what's the difference between if you just say, well, you know, I believe in universal brotherhood, and the way the philosophy looks at it. Well, one of the main things is the fact that the philosophy
we have one spiritual identity that is present within all. And we need to keep that in mind. We need, in order for something to go from a belief, which many may have, and it can just be some kind of vague idea. It can be an emotional idea, because there are many people who get very emotional about many things in today's society, which is very polarized. So we don't talk about the controversial issues here, but they are out there. we need to really test, check, and verify. If we put ourselves in the position of the observer with the idea that we are all one, that we are all one spiritual identity, but that we have different gifts, we have talents, we express, we all express ourselves somewhat differently. But if we, as the observer, we realize that we are not these bodies. These bodies come and go. We are not these thoughts. We can change them. We're not these personalities. You can improve your personality through self-discipline is the best way. So that's, yes?
This observer, do we all have access to that observer? Mm-hmm. We just got finished studying the Gita, and there's all kinds of things that we can do to help ourselves, not to create more karma. But in essence, if we're all a unity and a brotherhood, it says that there is that which is omnipresent and constant and unchanging. Does that exist within us? Mm.
That observer? We hope so, for the majority of us, because have you ever did something in a situation and after you did it, you thought, you know, that really wasn't the right thing to do. I really think I made a blunder here. Who's, you know, this dialogue that goes on within us at times is interesting, because if we look at it that way, that dialogue, that there is an observer within that's watching all this, we can honestly say that anything that comes directly to us, whether it be, quote, good or bad, is of our own doing. No one else can be blamed for it. No outside God can be blamed for it. It's of our own doing. So that idea that of meditation, which is brought out in point, of just meditating maybe on that idea, is there an observer within me? Is there a part of my nature that can actually be a judgment of what I'm doing is right or wrong, in harmony or not in harmony? There's a part of that. We all have it. We have to fine tune to listen more often.
So as far as the observer goes, no one could deny that we are observers. But what are we observing? Are we observing a sporting event or the political scene, or what are we observing? Are we identifying with that, or are we turning that inward and observing our thoughts and our feelings, and where are these coming from, and these circumstances that we have? Why was I born under these circumstances? Why? How come there are low people in high places and high, very advanced souls that are, we'll just say, street sweepers, whatever. that they're doing the most mundane tasks that there are. And so that comes under law, which is the second fundamental principle. It's we are always given what we need, whatever is coming to us under law, under karma, that is what we need. And once we learn the lesson, the necessity will cease. So instead of thinking that poor me, or observing in a vicarious way, it's the vicarious observant. We need to stop being the vicarious observer. I mean, we can still vicariously observe things, but we have to always bring it back. We have to bring it back to ourselves. And the practice of meditation and contemplation, of course, is a daily exercise that will help us do that.
Yes.
If the pursuit of the third object of the Theosophical movement, the investigation of the psychic powers latent in man and nature, is important, if it's not for the purpose of developing psychic phenomena or fascination with psychic phenomena, how does that object, that pursuit, increase our conviction in universal brotherhood?
Well, these are powers that we're speaking of. Great powers that can be used to modify things, to be straight along the line, can be a help to all. But we're talking about not developing psychic powers. They will come of their own when we are ready for them, when we have learned the lessons that open the doors to that inner nature of ours. So it's a great responsibility to understand, to have powers that can be used. But the individual using it has got to be one who's in balance and in harmony with all of nature.
In the back.
It would seem that if we investigate the phenomenon of psychic power, say we pick out a historical person that appeared to have enriched abilities, doesn't that become a proof that what can happen once can happen always, and that if that potential, however limited, shined through that one personage, then it's possible naturally to all?
Yes, well, the seed in one is the flower in another. And there's many examples throughout history. Unfortunately, some very high spiritual people have been vilified because they're not understood. Like Simon Magus is one. He was vilified. But so we need to realize that the seeds are within us all, but they need the conditions to sprout. But we study these because even if we do have inclinations or leanings or even a little bit of psychic ability, maybe we're more intuitive than others, and people realize that and they say, oh wow, you know, they're really intuitive. But we need to examine them. We don't want to become full of ourselves, and we don't want to misuse spiritual powers, because that's black magic, the misuse of spiritual power. So that's why we have that warning. We want to investigate, not practice, and even if we have them, we better, you know, we just really better know what we're doing, or we'll wreak havoc in this world. Yes.
Well, if we listen to the purposes of our modern scientists, even if their investigations are material and bent, they're looking for some underlying law, universal law. They're looking for some primordial element or atom see all the outer appearances, which makes us think we're different and separate, but the more we study our inner mental, psychic, and spiritual nature, the more we see that in those mysteries is our unity, where we are all one.
And it would seem it would make you feel more at home with yourself to have that feeling and have that understanding, and it would certainly abide how we interact with others to have that bit of knowledge, to have that feeling to know.
Are there any? Yes, yes. You.
Just to go back for a second, you had mentioned reincarnation being a very important idea that we try to have people understand. But you had mentioned that the driving force behind reincarnation is karma. Reincarnation is only the effect, an effect state. We create it all here in this moment. And that's why we are the creators of the world in which we live in, because we are creating every moment.
We are. That is true. The moment of choice is always now. And we are responsible for our thoughts and our actions. And oftentimes, we are responsible for our thoughts as well. So if we have thoughts that are not good, we should try to dismiss them as soon as possible and function on something and focus on something that's of the higher.
We'd like to close with a little short paragraph from the pamphlet, The United Lodge Theosophists, Its Mission and Its Future. Ideally, theosophists do not attempt to convert people to theosophy. Theosophical work is carried on under the assumptions that all human beings are souls in evolution and that all are capable of making decisions for themselves and that, sooner or later, they will come to study the great truths of theosophy. The Lodge is a place for those who have decided to begin now. So hopefully these ideas will stir something within us.
Can I just say something real quick? So we have a pamphlet on Brotherhood, an excellent pamphlet that's available for sale. But we neglected to mention in the beginning that all efforts here at the Lodge are voluntary in nature and of time, service, and money. All are needed, we do have expenses here. We do not pass the basket, but if you care to make a donation, a free will donation, you're certainly welcome to do so at the book table after the meeting.